Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. 8 a.m. Eastern Time, your first daily dose of happy for the day. And Joel, I have to say I am very happy this morning because I did another weather influencing deal that worked, and I'm so pleased about it. On Tuesday morning, I guess it was like midday Tuesday, they were talking pretty heavily about this big snowstorm, this fourth nor'easter of March coming through. And by Tuesday evening, they told us that in our area, we were going to get about 10 to 14 inches. And I said, no, we can't have that. The gardening season is about to start. Louise needs to get her business going. We need to get the people out in the field. And so I did my thing. I did my thing, you know, putting out there, well, we're going to have blue skies and sun and little puffy clouds and warm temps and all that kind of thing. And then the morning comes around Wednesday morning, and they say, yep, it's going to be about 10 to 14 inches. Snow will be starting about 8 a.m. And then 8 a.m. came, and there was no snow. So they said, well, it looks like it's been pushed back to about 11 a.m. And then 11 a.m. came, there's still no snow. And they said, it looks like it's about 1:30 now. So 1:30 comes along, still no snow. And now they're saying, well, it looks like there's kind of a shift going on here. There's this unexpected high about 5,000 feet above the ground that seems to be impeding the system. So we're now downgrading from 10 to 14 inches to 3 to 5 inches. And I said, nope, you're still not there. And I'm reporting this on the previous podcast. Well, overnight, we got nothing. And this morning, there's a little dusting on the windshield. That's our 10 to 14 inches. And I'm loving it.
You know, and that's such a great example of where your perspective keeps you and you know, what you need. And that's what we're talking about when we're doing this stuff is so much of this is how you're viewing it. And you know, if you'd have just been stuck in, oh God, the snow's going to mess me up. I have a few weeks ago, in a similar vein, I have some of my patients or clients that I work with are anxiety people. I call them. They're dealing with anxiety and that's sort of their issue. And it's not a diagnosed type thing as much as it is just sort of a behavioral mindset thing. And we're working on getting better. And ironically, I have on Wednesday mornings, three back-to-back anxiety patients. And the snow was predicted, this has been a few weeks ago, on a Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. And I laughed that almost the moment the weather came, I got three separate texts. These people are totally unrelated, don't know each other. What are we going to do Wednesday morning for snows? I'm like, well, this is like on a Sunday evening. And I'm like, well, let's just look at it where we're at. And over the next 24 hours, I'd received probably six or seven texts. Well, I don't know. And finally, I just said, look, we're going to take this week off. Let's meet next week. Just, not because it was going to be a big deal. It was just their anticipation of it was destroying. And instead of, just, you know, you reverse that. Now, in my world, you know, we get up that Wednesday morning. There was snow on the ground, and it did not impede my day whatsoever. I still was at the office at a normal time, did paperwork, did other stuff I needed to do. But you know, if, whether it's on the level of that you're talking about, it actually literally didn't snow, or your response to snow still remains in your control. That's the important thing to realize. And I had I did another radio show on a separate topic yesterday in a little south of Richmond, a town called Chester. And it was concerning foster care and adoption, sort of, you know, I'm an advocate for those.
Absolutely.
For those two causes.
Yeah.
And so I actually had, you know, had to coordinate with, you know, because I have Justin now and, you know, we have, it was forecast we would get, you know, 1 to 3 inches of snow. Well, in our area, 1 to 3 inches, so automatically schools are shut down.
Yeah.
Minimally a 2-hour delay, almost always a cancellation. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at it and I'm in Hanover, Virginia, which is probably about 25 miles from where I had to be. And it's all Interstate 95 between us. Mm-hmm. And anybody familiar with Interstate 95, it can be, no matter what part of the country you're in on Interstate 95, it can be exciting travel.
Yes, that's right.
Or, you know, using a positive spin. And so I found myself going, okay, now I have Justin. What am I going to do with him? School is going to be canceled. And I knew I could work this out. I knew it would work out. But I also had to battle that what if scenario.
Mm.
And finally, I just stopped and said, and a little background is the person that does the show, she's an attorney that works with kids and does a lot of pro bono work and a lot of really closes adoptions for, you know, one third the normal value of doing it. So she really is an advocate for this as well. Well, she pays for this show to take place every Wednesday morning.
Oh, wow.
So, mentioning to her that, you know, there's snow coming, and she said, well, I mean, as nicely as she could say it, well, that's great, Joel. However, I don't get a do-over. It's, you know, right. I have no backup. And so I realized I need to be there and I'll figure it out. Well, everything unfolded. The after-school provider for Justin was available.
Okay.
They were going to be open all day. So I got him there. But the amazing thing that I found on the way is because there was snow, it was much less traffic than normal. And the roads were perfectly clear.
Mm-hmm.
There was not an area that it was 35 degrees, but it was snowing,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't sticking to the ground.
Oh, nice.
So I actually arrived at the radio station 35 minutes early. And the reason that that's such an amazing thing that is sort of supporting where you're at is so much of this, you know, whether it's the, you know, the influencing of what you're intending it to be or your response to whatever it is, all that remains in your control. And that's a bigger issue in life or whatever, but everything that's coming has a response that remains in your control. And if you awfulize it or you take it to the worst, it more than likely will be an awful situation.
Right.
If you don't, just like you're saying, it's not acceptable. This isn't where it's going to be. We need to get the growing season going. We need to get this going. And you know, you actually shoved it a little south and poor New York City got your snow, but that's not your problem.
I won't take credit for that because normally snowstorms come through New Jersey, through New York City toward us. So I think that was happening anyway. It's just by the time it got to us, it just kind of dissipated.
Exactly. And the view of all that you're viewing, what I love what you're doing here is how you're viewing this, how you are looking at it. Because we tend to victimize ourselves and look at the helpless nature of where we're at. I always try to get people to run, no matter how bad your situation, not that this was a critical life or death situation for you.
No.
But if you're dealing with life, there's going to be an answer, but it's never found in the chaotic, awfulizing state of mind. It's never found there. It's being able to step back and look at options. There's always going to be an option that it's not always a perfect option, but it's going to be the best of the options available. But that option never avails itself in a negative, awfulizing mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It never avails itself.
That's right.
Why you keep, when you live in that mindset, that's why you keep making the same set of poor decisions that make no sense to the outside world, but you're coming from them from an awfulized state of mind.
Right. Yeah, I love the word too, by the way. We have people, listeners, who tell us they love the word awfulizing. So all credit to you for coming up with that word because it's a great word. And you're right, this awfulizing thing is just, it's something that we basically set ourselves up with it. And we're the ones setting ourselves up. We got to realize that. We're the ones doing it.
That's the $1 million answer because we create our own storms. We, in this case, you prevented your own storm in a sense. But what we do within that, we take a set of information and we use we find the worst possible event in our history that locks us in and so we can relate to it. And then we apply that outcome to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, you know, I've had a million things happen and not, you know, and a few of them have turned out not on the good side, However, most of the stuff always works out. In fact, everything has always worked out. But I tend to look for the most common denominator of the worst thing that happened. That's that point of awfulization that we talk about. Mm-hmm. And say, aha, I will attach that event to this event. And then we have the emotional thing that goes in place. One of the things I was listening to this morning is, and I forget which book it is by Dr. Joe DiPenza, but he was really bringing home a point of when you look at if you're watching, and there's science to back this up, and I'll give you the experiment. Basically, when someone is watching the Olympics, for example, and you see someone fall and it's a brutal leg injury, your body looks at that leg injury and now not to the degree the person just had their femur snapped, but at the same time, there's a pain receptor going off in you. You have a empathy toward that. There's a connection to seeing that injury and you feel it yourself. And not to be too graphic, but I know most men, if you saw a person like on America's Funniest Home Videos getting hit in the midsection of the groin area, and most men automatically sort of lean forward and go, oh, it's sort of a sympathy pain.
Absolutely.
I remember that, and that's very common. Watch it. Yeah. I showed a video at a talk I was giving of a similar thing. And I randomly had a clip in the middle of the video of this kid hitting a baseball that his dad was catching for, and it went right. And it was a very clear picture where it hit. And the entire male audience, when that happened, leaned forward and grabbed that area going, oh, and it was funny because they did it in unison.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And, sure.
And that's that sympathy or empathetic type connection. And you see that when you have all of this other stuff around you, and that's important. That's very important to see how that connection is. And you're saying, well, what does that have to do? But that's where that thought vibration and all of that stuff that comes up, because we feel that, so that creates a whole paradigm for us to deal with when we look at stuff like you're talking about. Does that make any sense?
No, absolutely it makes sense. In fact, what you're really describing there is the tendency that we all have, and it's more than a tendency for most of us. For most of us, it's like an absolute certainty that whatever is going on in our reality, we react to, and it becomes our dominant vibration. One of the biggest things that the teachers like, Abraham Hicks, or even the earlier ones like Seth or Joe DiPenza or The Secret or any of these others are teaching us is that we have to change our thought patterns in order to get a different reality, which means we can't be taking our cues from reality. When we take our cues from reality, we're basically undermining our own ability to be deliberate creators. And that's like the hardest thing to do when you're first, especially when you're starting out. Even now, I've been practicing it for a number of years. I still find it hard to do. In fact, one of the things that I am doing right now, Joel, is I'm on day 33 of my mirror work that I've been telling you about, and I'm so pleased I've gotten this far. I can report that the negative self-talk, which was my initial motivation for doing the mirror work, has reduced to such a small trickle that I don't even notice it anymore. I'm not ready to say that it's gone completely, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close to gone completely. But more importantly, what I have been building in the last couple days is a desire to not only tell myself how much I love myself and how proud I am of myself and how things are going great and I should just keep going and giving myself the cheerleading routine. I'm also saying, now I want to develop that laser focus, that makes me decide, I am going to decide, I'm going to focus on this. It has nothing to do necessarily with what's going on in reality, but I'm going to focus on it. And more importantly, I'm not going to allow myself to be distracted. No distraction, including what's going on in reality, is going to get in my way. And I'm hoping that if I do that for another 30 days, I'm going to be able to really take that to the next level. Because that's been a tough one. I mean, that's tough for everybody, I think, trying to see reality differently from what we actually see in reality, right? Which is really what the topic of the show is. The topic of the show is dreaming, the importance of dreaming. And that's what dreaming is. That's what imagination is. Imagination is creating in your mind something that does not yet exist. It's like when you're the little kid, you know, and you're playing fireman. Are you a fireman? No, you're a little kid, but you can pretend you're a fireman. And in the act of pretending to be a fireman, some kids actually find they love it so much they become actual firemen when they grow up. Others just say, well, I'm just playing with it, and that's all, you know. But it's still the dreaming aspect.
Well, and that's that same concept is spoken about Abraham Hicks a lot of telling another framing of this is tell your story as you want it to be.
Yes.
You know, you do that with, you know, when you tell a story and I've had people say, well, you're just telling a fake reality. I said, no, you're telling the story as you want it to be. We have a tendency to, as we said before, to use the negative basis. You know, I often see so many people in a day, and I'm out and about, and one of the standard greetings that I think everybody does is, hey, how are you? Well, the truth is most people don't really care, but that's the statement that we make.
Oh, I hope not. Jeez.
Unfortunately, that's the way it really is. It isn't that they don't care. It's that it's just they're neutral on it. It's a generic statement. And nobody's really expecting an answer more than, great, how are you? That's all most people want.
That's true.
Just being honest. I do things differently, but that's what most people are. And my response, anytime somebody asks me that, I will use an extreme adjective like spectacular or, you know, it could not be any better, stuff like that. And that usually gets people like, wow, you know, and when you're consistently answering that way, there's one gentleman at the gym, he's a really nice guy, and he calls me Mr. Fantastic. And
wow.
And which I always thought was a great compliment. And one day somebody said, why do you always say this? Because I always ask him how he's doing. He said, he's always fantastic. And he said, I start to believe that's what he is. And,
okay.
And so if you say it enough and believe it enough, it has no option but to come true. And that is the basis of the law of attraction. The same with dreaming. You know, that there's a intentional dreaming or intentional viewing or you know, no matter what framing you want to call it or what you want to put the words or descriptive words around it, but when you visualize or when you intentionally start seeing the life as you want it, and the mirror work you're doing is so incredible that you're able to shut down this negative self-talk, which has probably been your biggest challenge over the years, would be my guess.
Oh, God, yes. It has been haunting me since I first started trying to practice The Secret in 2008. And for the longest time, I couldn't even get past it. The negative self-talk was so loud and so dominant that I could try to focus on something. Literally, I remember the first time I tried to focus on something positive, I could only do it for 5 seconds because that negative self-talk was just hammering me. Just hammering me. So, yeah, this is a big deal for me to have gotten rid of it with the mirror work.
And that's something that I'm so excited that you're doing. And I have, being your friend, and most people don't realize this, we have never met face-to-face.
I know, isn't that weird?
But
I feel like I know you better than most people I've ever met, but we've never actually been face-to-face. It's strange.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, I consider you a great friend.
Me too.
So, you know, within that, you know, me having sort of a front row seat to just watching your evolution of and hearing the doubt, but the effort, but the doubt, and then the change in the actions and the stuff that you had the hardest time with, and actually watching you implement that has been amazing to see. And it happened in a relatively short period of time. You've drastically changed your brain. And that's what we're selling, the concept of the law of attraction. This is how you change your brain. The brain becomes a new way of thinking. You don't fall back into that negative self-doubt, that pattern. And for a long time, I kept thinking, okay, well, I got it. And then I would get it to a different level. Oh, I really got it now. Wow, you know, now I really got it.
Yeah, right.
You get to that point where you start to be able to affect things in a way that you never dreamed possible.
Mm.
And, you know, that's the biggest part for me has been when I realize when I'm sitting down with a client and I can raise my vibration, and I've worked really hard at being able, and I usually keep a very high vibration anyway, but when I raise it to a certain level, I don't care how bad a shape they're in, they can't help but raise their vibration with me. Sure. It's an energy force at work. And that's what this is about. When they can learn to raise their own vibration, then the rest of the stuff comes into life. There was a point in my life where probably 75% of my thoughts were basically worried about my financial condition. I would be like, okay, I got enough money and everything that would come along, I would filter it with money. Like, do I have enough money to do this? And I worked hard to rebuild my life after a really bad bout of addiction. But I still for a long time struggled with the money piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those things that took me wait a minute, Joel, you've always been able to make it. Some months it was by the skin of your teeth, but you've always been able to make it. So why don't you quit making it by the skin of your teeth and tell a different story? And that's what the law of attraction was telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly I woke up to a point where I'm fine. There's no worry in that area. And then you start to realize, yeah, there is no worry. And that I am so far away from that being a concern in my life. I don't have that drive, and I have plenty of money, and I'm not saying that in an arrogant way, but all of my needs are met. All of my, you know, my son is taken care of. I had a concept the other day when, you know, because my other two boys, you know, that I've had life insurance, a term life policy in place for years. Well, you know, once I got them past college age, I didn't necessarily need a lot, you know, any life insurance. So
sure.
I just let it lapse. I mean,
right.
Now I have, you know, sort of that unexpected kid that I adopted that,
yeah.
that last minute thing. And so I, you know, I'm like, well, now is me getting life insurance anti-law of attraction? And I had to debate that.
Really?
And because I'm like, well, I don't think I'm going to die. I don't think that's a thing that's going to happen. But where I came to was, look, this is just a piece of mature financial responsibility. It isn't, it'll never be cashed. It'll never be used. I got a 10-year life term that, you know, very reasonably priced. And it's just a way of making sure that all my I's are dotted and my T's are crossed. It's not but in the beginning I was having, you know, why do I need this? I don't really need it. And I don't think, I'm very confident it'll never be used. But I had that debate for a little bit. Is this anti-law of attraction? Because I don't want to even put that possibility out there. But I, you know, and so those are where my thoughts have gone now. But it's not about a lack of stuff. And most depression, or most people that describe depression, are really describing a lack of something in their life. And they get it confused and they go tell their doctor, well, I'm not fulfilled, or I'm not this, or life has no, well, clearly the doctor must feel that it's a lack of Prozac in their life, because that's what they get.
That's right. Yes.
And Prozac, you know, shockingly to some people, doesn't fill any voids at all. And 90% of the people that is prescribed to, in my personal opinion, don't have a lack of brain chemicals, but it does tend to focus on that. And again, it creates an illusion, but it doesn't address what we're worried about, where we're at. And if anything, you have laid out a blueprint that I have watched you overcome. And I'm not saying depression. I don't know what we'd call that, but a malaise for sure. I've watched you work your way out of a very negative, self-defeating mindset and turn into a very positive, successful mindset. And you've done that with, I mean, you have grinded that out. You've battled that in a good way. And I've watched you do it. And it's amazing to see the results firsthand.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I have to honestly say the first year that you and I met on the podcast, which was December of 2012, I think I actually was still in depression at that point. It may not have been diagnosed as depression because I never went to anybody to diagnose it, but I mean, I was definitely feeling depressed. And it was one of the reasons I did the podcast and started going with it, because doing the podcast felt better. So, okay, hey, there's the best medicine, right? Something that doesn't actually require a chemical going into my body, and I can actually feel better. So I kept doing the podcast. And I do appreciate your recognition about how I've been able to kind of, you know, fight through it and get to the point now where I'm so pleased to say the negative self-talk is virtually gone. That's actually more valuable to me than money, relationships, health, because that's the root of relationships, health, and money. That's the root of all the things that we're looking for. Once you have that self-talk gone and you can control your own focus, that's where it all makes the biggest difference. That's where the rubber hits the road. The thing that really captures my attention, though, from what you were talking about, is something that I think everybody can identify with, which is that battle about, well, do I focus on this negative thing? And, you know, is it a negative thing, first of all, to focus on something like buying term life insurance? And second of all, if it is a negative thing, you know, aren't I kind of working in the wrong direction with the law of attraction? And what I've come to realize about it is two things. First, it's not a bad thing to look at negatives. We are in a world, as Abraham describes it, a world of contrast. We came here specifically to experience that contrast. That sure. means we have to be looking at the negatives, right? You know, I mean, that heck, if there's anybody who's taught me that, that's you from your experience, because you dealt with some incredible negatives, unbelievable negatives, negatives I can hardly even fathom. And you stared them in the eye, and you now actually consider them to be, you know, some of the greatest moments of your life because of the springboard they created to put you to where you are today. So clearly negatives are not Absolutely. A bad thing to look at. I think the only real problem with negatives is when we choose to live in them. And the way I like to look
well,
at
that's
it,
the million, yes,
that's it right there, right? I mean, the way I look at it is yes. The way Abraham teaches it. Abraham teaches us that if we focus on any topic, doesn't matter what it is, for 17 seconds, we will manifest another thought along the same line. And if we do it for another 17 seconds, we'll get another thought along the same line. If we carry this on for 68 seconds, in other words, four of those segments, then we actually start a physical manifestation going. Well, to me, that's like, hooray. That means I got 68 seconds to focus on a negative. And as long as I stay within that 68 seconds, I have time to not only stop the negative thing from manifesting, but I can actually reverse it by focusing on a positive. So now I can look at the negative. I don't have to get worried about it. I can say, you know, it's okay to worry, to look at this thing, not to worry about it, but to look at it and say, well, it doesn't make sense for me to buy life insurance. Well, yeah, I guess it does. I mean, I certainly want to have it just in case, you know, I lose my focus and, you know, things go wrong. Sure, let's keep it there just to be safe. And now I'm done. I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, and that's how I that's the exact reframe that I got to. I said, I don't want to. You know, I'm not buying it in anticipation of ever having it used. I'm buying it with the concept of taking away the stress of if something happened to me, you know, because I'm a single parent again, I'm a sole provider for this young man. And, you know, I'm we're in great shape even without the life insurance. But I want to make sure that college is taken care of, that he's provided for in the manner that he's become accustomed to already. Mm-hmm. And that's just common sense. That's positive.
Right. It is.
Look at it, I'm in a position to be able to provide it is a positive. And it will never be used, but it is there. But your overall point, which I am so glad that we're to, is negatives happen. It is an illogical thought process to understand, you know, and Abraham Hicks says probably the best of all the gurus in explaining this. Negatives are a contrast. There's no way to understand the positive until you've been through the negative. Most people that get to the law of attraction have gotten there through a path of adversity, of negatives.
Mm-hmm.
That's where most people get to it. There's very few people that say, you know, I'm randomly going to go on this quest and, oh, look, law of attraction, that's perfect. most people have to get to a place of discovery. And that's what I love is when people from all different walks of life, different backgrounds, we all end up here. And it's funny, which I find great humor in, and I, not in a mocking way, but everybody gets here and they have their, it's almost the same path of acceptance with it. You discover it. I always describe it with, you know, the secret was sort of the really light introductory method to it. Everybody yes. liked it. Ooh, good, you know.
Right.
And then most people end up at like Abraham Hicks, which is like, okay, now we're getting pretty deep. and then when people discover like the Seth material, you're like, okay, now we're way down the rabbit hole.
Right.
But you see the evolution of the discovery and then even if we branch off in different, you know, belief systems within the law of attraction, you know, like there's people that have differing views with the law of attraction. There's those that are just simply, you know, it's only about thought and nothing else matters. Then there's those that are, no, the action piece has to match the thought. But all those little differences are really irrelevant because they're right only because you believe they're right. I have a doctor that I refer to here in Richmond that when people have some illnesses, and he's very much into the sort of what we believe, that holistic approach, law mm-hmm. of attraction thinking. And he stated that what works for an individual is what that individual believes what will work for them. And so he listens to what they're saying. And if a person is hell-bent and determined that an antibiotic is needed, then an antibiotic is needed.
Yeah.
It's just what they're not going to get better without it. And, you know, we have had a lot of discussions, and I've used an example before, but when I had my gallbladder out several years ago, I was in at the same time another man had his gallbladder out.
I remember.
Well, yeah, this gentleman was in the most unbelievable pain. He went in with a very negative attitude. He was in the hospital 3 or 4 days. I went in at noon and was out by 5.
That's just crazy.
And dismissed it and left with no painkillers and went about my life. And it was a different thing when I went back to pick up my charger, which I had left in the hospital. I went back the next day, and I'm in street clothes, just walking normally. And he's like, what happened? What did they mess up my surgery? And, I'm like, no. I said, you're going to get fine. I didn't give him the reason. So no, you're a hypochondriac whiner. I didn't say that. but that was my diagnosis. Yeah. So, but because the victimization of ourselves, when you live in the pain, the concept that the pain is not the problem, it's your focus on the pain that's killing you. That's the piece when you understand that. Pain patients, a lot of my fibromyalgia patients, when they understand that the pain itself is not the relevant piece, it's the focus on the pain that's the problem, that's when things change. And just like you're talking about, you can refocus your brain into other mindsets, whether it's pain or wherever you're at, by doing the stuff that you're talking about, by the mirror work or telling a different story. You know, the idea that we Dr. DePinzia this morning in the book I was listening to was talking about a client of his that she came in with all these issues and she got upset with her. She got upset with him that she kept saying, well, you're not listening to me. And he was like, no, you're not listening to me. You are a victim of your pain. We've got to stop this dialogue, because she had this history that, you know, her parents were abusive and her husband was abusive. And I'm not saying they weren't. He wasn't saying they weren't abusive.
No.
But that was her narrative. That was her life. And once he got her to change all that and say, that's not where we're at today, he literally helped her rewire her brain, and that fixed her pain. And that's the piece that we as humans, everything has a fix. We have become victims of our thoughts when we're in an unfixable situation.
Oh, no doubt.
Fixing the thoughts fixes the situation.
No doubt at all. Absolutely. In fact, one of the key things to understand here is that when we're in that state of pain, that is so all-encompassing. I mean, it just grabs your attention and sucks you right in. It is beyond doubt the hardest place to start changing the mindset, because we're constantly inundated by the pain. The pain is in our awareness at all times. So it's a tough place to climb out of. But the good news, you can climb out of it. It is possible to do it. You can do it. It takes extra work because now you're in the worst time to do it, but you can still do it. It is possible to climb out. It takes more effort. It takes more focus. It takes more attention to detail. It takes more attention to, I am not going to allow myself to be distracted by that pain. Instead, I'm going to focus on this over here, which makes me feel better. That takes a lot of work when you're in that place. But if there's anybody who proved that, it was you. You were in some of the most amazingly unbelievable, I mean, your pain was more psychic than it was physical, but it was still incredible pain that you were in when you were in your worst place. It was a really bad place. And yet you still managed to climb out of it.
Well, and that became the discovery. And you know, I have the benefit of multiple years now of this happening. I don't want to make it sound like I snapped my fingers and did this perfectly.
No.
But it was a process of discovery that taught me that this, I was creating my own pain. And this is where a lot of people in today's society, and especially professionals, they really take issue with the law of attraction. We are manifestors of our own pain. We are not victims of pain. We're not victims. Stuff happens to everyone. Our response to what happens is the difference in that. I'll brag a little bit about my son, Justin. He won the North Carolina State Taekwondo
Championship. Yeah, that was great. Wow, I saw that. Yeah. Fantastic.
Whoa. Yeah. And he will be competing in Salt Lake City for the national championship sometime in July.
Good for him.
So very proud of him. But when I was there, I call her a soccer mom, but she's really a Taekwondo mom. And she was there with her son, probably was 10. And he had been in a match where it was tied at the end. And they have a sort of a sudden death round. And the first one to score a point wins. And you know, so I heard her after the match, and she was furious with the kid's coach. Well, he didn't tell him that the first one to score a point would win, or he would have won. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, oh, God. And then the kid said, yeah, I would have won if you had told me that.
Yeah.
Well, the coach had clearly told the kid, you're in overtime, buddy. You go score your point. He had told him. But now the kid is making the excuse. And in reality, the child lost. The child lost the match. It's okay.
Yeah.
If somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. But what she was – didn't know what she was doing, and if it would have been any remotely way part of my business, I would have said this, but I just walked away. You're creating a victim in the child.
Yes.
Instead of saying, I fought a great tournament and I ended up with a silver medal, which is amazing.
It's a great achievement.
It is. But now she minimalized the silver medal and made excuses for his loss. And instead of him accepting and saying, okay, I need to work harder, I need to get more assertive, and I'm now a victim of my poor coaching. And it was, and that was the message she delivered. And the reason I use that example in the child, we have delivered that it's not your fault. And the law of attraction says, you know, let me love you here, but yes, it is your fault. You brought this about. I have this friend of mine that
in fact, I'll even interrupt there for a second. I want to interrupt there a second and say, it isn't even your fault. You attracted it, but there's no blame involved here.
Well, I use the word fault in a sense. I have reorganized words. Fault doesn't have the same meaning to me as most people. You
That's
are responsible for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And blame is not a thing in my world anymore. Blame is irrelevant in my world. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You know, when you're at fault at something, that just means you're responsible for it. I'm at fault for my great life. So I look at it that way. I am responsible for my life. And that is the piece that is exciting to me, that I take away that conduit of, you know, well, this is society's fault. You know, life attempted to kick my butt. It did for a while. My response to it made me stronger, and now I can deal with whatever life. That's how I look at it. Life trained me to deal with what I had to do, and my response had to change to life, or I was going to keep being that victim of all this stuff that happened.
That's such an important point. This whole idea of a victim. Victims are not created by circumstances. They are created by attitudes.
Yes. And that is where a lot of modern psychologists and therapists, in my mind, greatly harm their client. Mm-hmm. They become trauma specialists, and all they do is reinforce the trauma. Well, you know, this lady had been going to this therapist for a while. The therapist recommended to see me because for some life coaching stuff. And so I was talking. She said, after about the fourth time, she says, "Well, I'm 350 pounds, and it's because of my trauma in childhood." And finally, after about the third or fourth time of her saying that, I said, "Ma'am, I mean this with great respect. You're 350 pounds because you eat 6,000 calories a day." And, you know, I'm sorry, but if we're looking at what now, if your argument is you're using food as a medication and you eat 6,000 calories a day to medicate for the pain, I get that concept. But let's get a direct connection. You're the one shoveling the food in your mouth, keeping the weight up. Let's look at that. And now you're doing that. It does help to understand that's why you're doing it. But are you going to continue to look at that trauma and allow it to, or are we going to address it? Now, that's an offensive statement to hear at first to her, that she is responsible. But once you understand you're also responsible for the great stuff. It isn't about, you know, putting yourself in the poor me. It's about, no, I can stop this. And the great thing that happened with her is she quickly realized, you know, she said, "You're right." After being pissed at me for a little bit, she was right. She said, "You're right. I'm the one that's still shoveling it in. I'm the one that stops at the store and buys double stuffed Oreos and sneaks them in my purse. Don't tell anybody about
it." Don't tell anybody.
And she said, so she identified it. And once she stopped her action, I said, "Don't be victimized any longer. Things will happen in life, but when you play the role that's being assigned to you, the role of victim, to me, is the most debilitating role that a human being can have. The ultimate in disability.
In fact, I'm going to take it even a step further. I'm going to say something that just blows the minds of everybody whose minds have already been blown, and that is, it isn't even the food that she's taking in. It's the mindset. The mindset is what sets her up for all of it. If she changed her mindset, not only would the food behavior change, but the weight itself would change. She created the weight with her mind. And that's a really rough concept to come to terms with. But the fact is, if you created the weight with your mind, you can remove the weight with your mind. It works both ways.
And you know, we had and I may have shared this a long time. I don't share this one often, but in keeping it very, you know, just loose description of this, I had a young person in a group home years ago that had been horribly sexually abused for several years. And this person's behavior was, you know, as you can imagine, the response to that at 12 years old.
Oh, God.
But, you know, acting out, very, very disruptive.
Sure.
And so, one day we were and I was running a group home at the time many years ago, and it wasn't a male, that didn't give away anything. And he came in and he had just raised in hell. He was throwing things across the room. And so I walked in there. I said, "Buddy," I said, "what are you doing? You don't know what I've been through." And I said, I do actually know what you've been through. I can't relate to what you've been through, but I know what you've been through, and that does suck. Yeah. And I said, "But I'm still trying to figure out why you're throwing papers across the room." And he looked at me, "Because of what I've been through." And I said, "But again, can you explain to me why throwing papers across the room is helping what you've been through?" He goes, "Well, it's not helping it." I said, "Okay. So is there some other action we can do that I can assist you with that maybe deal with it?" And so we had this conversation for about an hour. And I made a statement that I had forgotten about, and I'll tell you how I remembered it. he was, I said, I told him, I said, you know, I'm sorry. I don't have words to describe. I have no explanation of what you've been through or why it happened, but there's two courses here. You can continually be sexually abused by this person mentally as you're doing. That's what you're doing now. Or you can take that and that whatever's in there and bottle it up and give you a new direction. You can change it and channel it and fix it and use it to get stronger. It can defeat you or it can make you. And I don't even remember really telling him that. But he told me later. So years go by and I go through my own craziness and I get my life back. And so I get this email one day from this person I didn't recognize and said, you probably don't remember me. And he said his name. And he had a University of Texas email address. And
I'm wow.
Okay. And he explained who he was. And so I said, give me your number. I called him and we started talking. And he said, by the way, I'm a pre-med student at the University of Texas.
Wow.
And I said, oh my God, you're kidding me. And he said, no. And I said, well, congratulations. He said, well, that's why I actually reached out to you. So I realized you're the reason I'm a pre-med student. And I said, well, first of all, thank you, but I can't be the reason. You've obviously done great work. And he explained that it was that statement that he realized he was re-victimizing himself.
Wow.
He said, I have to stop this. And he said, my job now is I'm going to be a psychiatrist, a child psychiatrist that specializes in dealing with sexual abuse. I'm going to take my pain and I'm going to take the message to others. And so he said, instead of it defeating me, I am going to use it to make me stronger and help other people so they don't have to go through that again. He said, there was no stronger words ever said to me. And he said, no other therapist or anybody else had the courage to tell me that. I was re-victimizing myself. And I needed to hear that. And I said, well, I be honest with you, I wish I remember saying it, but I do. That is something I would say.
Yeah, right. So
I said, and to be honest with you, after I last saw you, I went through a lot of craziness myself and turned things around. But he was just what an amazing man that I have incredible respect for. That was a couple years ago. He's well into medical school now. I get occasional updates. He'll be a great psychiatrist and he will bring a perspective that very few people have to this.
Yeah.
And his mindset is about not reinforcing the victim mode. It doesn't mean that trauma doesn't need to be addressed, but somehow addressing of trauma right now has turned into coddling of trauma. It's not your fault for doing this because of your trauma. The question is right now, trauma created this. Yes, let's work on it. Let's move on from it. But there's an attachment to trauma that's being talked about right now that I think is unhealthy in most therapeutic environments.
I agree with you. And when you told the story about how he was in medical school with the intention of becoming a psychiatrist to help other people who had gone through abuse like that, I mean, I just got this thing in my chest like, oh, unbelievable. I mean, it was such a warm feeling. And I'm blown away by it. Like, wow, what a fantastic transformation this guy has made. I applaud him. I absolutely applaud
him. Well, it's such an amazing definition of what we're talking about. He used the law of attraction, and also I used this opportunity because when I told him that was my pre law of attraction days. I really understood it, you know.
Yeah.
And so what we did now is, you know, I sent him a copy of The Secret, sent him a copy of my book. So now he's very much into law of attraction. He's really getting it.
Oh, that's great.
So not only will he be a psychiatrist to help, but he'll also be a psychiatrist that's going to use the law of attraction and positive thought and thought manifestation as part of his practice.
Wow.
Which is, you know, what I have always believed is the solution to psychiatry.
Yeah, I agree with you. Oh, that really got me right in the heart. That was just really powerful. Oh, what a story.
Well, and it is, that's somebody who took a horrible event, and that's what I'm always trying to get people to understand. This is an incredible event that happened with all of this negative, all the stuff that we're talking about. And this will benefit other people because of what he went through. He made sense of what happened. It'll never be good what happened.
No.
It never will be good.
No.
But what he did was, I'm going to quit being a victim of that, and I'm going to use that. I want to be strengthened by it, and I'm going to go take that message. And again, that becomes the point of what I think life is for us, is taking what happens and reframing it and use it as fuel, as using it as success. And I can't wait to see what this kid does, or man now.
Oh, yeah.
Doctor does.
I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what this guy did was something that we talked about early on in the show. He refused to accept what he saw in reality. He refused to be the person who continued to victimize himself. He recognized that he was victimizing himself.
Right.
He didn't recognize it before.
Right.
He recognized it now and did something about it and said, I'm not going to be a victim of myself anymore. Wow. What a breakthrough.
Right.
There are people who would beg for that. That's a fantastic breakthrough.
Well, and that's the piece that I believe everyone that's listening, when you understand what we do to ourselves with our negative thoughts, we're victimizing ourselves. And excuse my directness, but it's very important to hear this. Shit happens, and how you respond to it is the answer. And when you look at it from all of that, all the views, that's the answer to the law of attraction. The law of attraction is, it isn't negative things aren't going to happen, as you said along the way in this show. Negative things are going to happen. They're not going to own you. You're not going to own the negative. You're going to respond to it. Things happen. I have a friend that had a wreck the other day, and he's early in the law of attraction. And I don't know why he ran off the road. I think in Richmond, there's sort of a rule that if it's a forecast of snow, you run into the ditch on purpose. But, it seems to be the case. And he was that one that decided to do that.
Uh-huh, yes.
And you know, it was like, I said, well, buddy, it was 40 degrees outside. And I don't know why that. But anyway, he said, you know, I've really been thinking, he said, the law of attraction is not working for me. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, I ran into a ditch today. And I go, okay. I said, well, what body part did you lose? He said, well, nothing. I said, were you or your children injured? And he goes, no. I said, well, are you going to miss work? No. Do you have insurance on your car? Yeah. I said, so of all the things that happened, running into a ditch at 55 miles an hour and nothing happened, and you're trying to tell me the law of attraction is not working?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And again, it's just how you frame it.
That's right.
And he's like, oh my gosh, I get to look at it that way. And, that's where early on, especially people that do the law of attraction early, I don't know who tells them this or where they derive this from. It is never about, it's never going to be about negative things not happening. They're going to be there. Everything is about your response. And that's what the law of attraction is trying to get you to do. It's about how you're looking at it, how you respond to it, and the dialogue that's created from it, the inner dialogue.
That's right.
And that's the piece you're in control of. I can't control so many things, most things I can't control, but always remaining incomplete and just without any interference, it's my response and my perspective of the situation is completely in my control. That's where that's the human superpower. That's the one thing we have that nobody can take away from you is your response to that. And you know, I'm very much into, a lot of the thought of like Buddhism and, you know, the Buddhist thoughts toward a lot of this are very similar about, You are in charge. You mm-hmm. are your own power in this case. And that's so freeing.
Yeah.
But it's also scary to some people.
Oh, it is scary. It's very scary because now it means that everything that comes into our lives, we really did attract, and we did it. That's a tough pill to swallow at first. But once you swallow it and you realize that it's true, you also begin to realize how empowering it is. Because now, all of a sudden, we have conscious access to a power we didn't know we had all along, and now we can learn to use it to our benefit. In fact, we can even get to the point where not only do we never have a negative experience happen where we think of it as negative, but actually by staying in that positive zone more and fewer negative things happen, period. So we get the best of both worlds out of it. And that's like, that's the ultimate power, really.
Yes. And that's that answer that we seek. That's that concept of, you know, we're looking at the law of attraction. We're looking at happiness, and we're looking at the stuff that makes life worth living, at least in my perspective of life. Life is neither easy nor hard. It is only what you make of it. It's, you know, I look at it like no matter what happens. I mentioned the other day, I had to pick up something from a pharmacy for Justin, and I just mentioned to, you know, they apparently there's been a really bad flu season this year. A lot of people got really sick, and it seems like it's getting better. I don't know, but it's just my reaction or my question was, is the flu season getting better? It seems like it is. And she goes, yeah, there's a lot less prescriptions for Tamiflu. And she said, I didn't get it. Let me knock on some wood. and I go, you didn't get it and you're knocking on wood. Is that more effective than the flu shot or not? And she laughed and she said, no, if I say I didn't get it, I'm more likely to invite that in my life. I said, no. You're very healthy. The reason you didn't get it is you're very healthy. You take care of yourself and your body, you know, may have been exposed to the flu virus, but you didn't get it. That's a different perspective to look at it. And it opened the door to us talking. And she said, you're right. And her position as a pharmacist, she shared, and I know we're running out of time, but she shared a quick story about, you know, she'll see people's, obviously everybody's drug regimen, and she looks at them and goes, and she can't comment on it. She's not a doctor.
Right.
But she's like, oh my goodness. She said probably 90% of people with their medications the doctor's just medicating their hypochondriac mentality. And I'm like, wow, pretty strong. So, but we're in control of so much. That's the beauty of it. We get to be in charge of either side of that. And that's what I love about what we're able to do every week. We get together, we talk about this. The feedback has been really great here. I tell you every week, Walt, I do this out of, you know, just pure, it helps me. This is my hour of therapy in a sense.
Well, you know now why it is that I went to doing it, you know, 12 times a week, because I once a week wasn't good enough. I had to have more. I'm addicted. If there's going to be something I'm going to be addicted to, it might as well be this, because this is healthy. This is great. I'm loving it.
Well, and the change in your life is obvious just when you started adding this to it. And there will be the day, and it may be this year, where we get a much wider audience and have more exposure. I think we're gaining momentum. Our podcast listens are way up. The audience is, you know, again, we're getting feedback from people. It's very positive.
It is. Yeah.
I just love where we're at. I'm glad we're doing it.
I'm glad too. And I want to thank you for coming back, because there was that point almost a year ago where you had to leave because you had so many things going on, you just couldn't do it anymore. And I mean, the good news is that enabled me to bring David on board. But the bad news was that I couldn't talk to you anymore. And then you could come back in December. I said, yay, this is great. I love this. So thank you for coming back. I appreciate it.
That's really great to do it. And you know, as I said, we love to hear. I love to hear from people that are listening. JoelElston.com is my website. JoelElston@gmail.com is my email address. Feel free to drop me a line. I answer everything I get and would love to hear from you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Take advantage. I mean, if you've been thinking about which of the co-hosts to contact, and quite honestly, they're all fantastic. But if you're going to pick one, you can't go wrong going with Joel, because Joel's depth of experience with all aspects of LOA is just unfathomable. So, yeah, great choice. Joel, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to doing it again next week.
Well, great to talk to you, my friend.
And we'll see you all next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.